Hi, my name's Courtney Thorpe, and welcome to More Than Just a Mum. My crew very quickly disappeared. I found it really hard to bond.
Don't go to the gym, just have a sleep.
To be honest, this feels a little bit surreal that I'm sitting here starting my own podcast. And I'm sitting here in my home with my amazing producer, Katie, looking right at me. Gosh, 6 to 7 months ago, I would never have thought that I'd be back in the world of storytelling and putting myself out there, and even to a place where I'm about to share what's happened over the last 6 to 7 months. I never thought I'd be here again, putting myself out there. And I'm so excited that I am, because it's a really, really big step.
Hi, my name's Courtney Thorpe and I'm representing Australia.
Welcome to Mercedes-Benz Fashion Festival. I'm Courtney Thorpe and I'm your host for the next 4 nights.
Hi everyone, I'm Courtney Thorpe and we are here at the Emporium Precinct today.
In this podcast, I'm going to be talking with some amazing women from all different walks of life. There'll be some that you might have heard of before and others that you haven't, but that have a really unique experience to share and talk about. I think More Than Just a Mum is exactly that, that we as women are so much more than just that label of mum. So this podcast is to talk about all things, the good, bad and ugly, things that we don't usually talk about, that have a stigma attached to them, that we usually hide and tuck away in those neat little corners and never bring back out again. Well, we're bringing them out and we're going to talk about them. I can't wait for you guys to hear some of the amazing stories that are going to come your way. So I was a Brisbane girl, born and bred. I grew up with a pretty much typical suburban family. I had my mum, my dad, my younger brother, and we lived a great life. My parents were so hardworking. I remember at the age of 9, I watched Judging Amy on TV, and I turned to my mum and I said, I'm going to be a judge one day. And my whole life, that was all I was going to be. I was going to be a judge. The only person that wasn't supportive of that was my nan. It's crazy because I was this slightly chubby, buck teeth, bushy hair, covered in freckles. But for some reason, my nan always called me a beauty queen. And I remember watching Miss World with her when I was about 11. And she said to me, that's going to be you one day. And she was determined I was going to be a beauty queen. But I had no interest in it. It was law. And that was the goal. It didn't turn out that way. I worked in fashion for a number of years and loved it. And then, I don't know, maybe it was a pulling of my nan, but I decided after a really, really horrible relationship where the boy had called, well, he was a man, he wasn't a boy, kept calling me fat and lazy. And he eventually broke up with me. And I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to rub this in your face. I wish I could say it was better than that. I wish I could say I wanted to try something new and put myself out there. But I entered a pageant purely for revenge. I didn't even make it past the first round. So that was sort of my pageant dreams that I thought at the time were done and dusted. In 2014, I entered what was my fourth pageant and I was crowned Miss World Australia. And I was going to represent my country at the Miss World pageant in London. It was, other than becoming a mother, the highlight of my life. It obviously led to some amazing opportunities afterwards. I got some great gigs emceeing. All of a sudden, people wanted me to be an ambassador for their brands. I was networking. I was meeting people. I was living this amazing life that I could have only dreamt of. And I decided my new goal was to be a television presenter. So I started knocking down the doors at Channel 7, but I finally got there and loved it. I remember saying to myself, I will never, ever get too used to this that I won't think it is the coolest thing ever when I see myself on TV. I was truly proud of myself. I also did go back to my childhood goal all at the same time, and I was accepted into law. And of course, as the saying goes, just when you least expect it, you find the love of your life. And that's exactly what happened with my husband, Jared. I had been working as an ambassador for a female-orientated brand at the time when they told me that I was going to have a co-ambassador who was a male, who was an NRL player. And I was disgusted. I did not want anything to do with this guy. Why were we getting an NRL player of all men to come on and be an ambassador for a female brand? I kind of had to suck it up and put my big girl pants on. He'd been messaging me for a little while. After a bit of chatting, he asked me to meet with him. So I begrudgingly did. I was not looking forward to it. I was already doing my eye rolls before I walked up to him. He was standing outside a restaurant at South Bank, and I walked up and it was raining, and I said, hi. And he turned around, and that was it. I was head over heels, madly in love with the bloody NRL player.
Does it here by Wallace, who's away. Nobody in
front
of him. It
was just such a whirlwind. We went so fast, but it was amazing. All those stereotypes that I'd heard about football players, well, he proved them all to be wrong. He had two beautiful little girls. I adored him. I fell in love with him first, but I knew that if this was going to work, I was taking on an ex and I was taking on two little girls that weren't my own and navigating what would be a blended family. Lara and Peyton, they were 2 and 4 when I met them, and we just instantly connected. We became this instant little family of four. I became a mum overnight. And I don't mean that to take away from the girl's mum at all, because of course she's their mother first and foremost. But with the amount that I had to do and was expected to do, it really was a mum role. It was what, and I can say that now as a mother myself, what I did for those girls is what you do for children as a mother. You're there for them emotionally, to help them develop, to organise them, to turn up to events, to cheer them on, to be there to comfort them in their sad times. I was there for them and I loved it. But it was also really, really hard. I very quickly became absorbed in this new family life, and my exciting job that was just really taking off, I had really big things coming. It started to disappear, and the opportunities that I had coming my way were drying up because I wasn't at the work events. I wasn't at the networking events. I couldn't because Jared had football and it was his weekend with the girls. So I was at home. There were days where I was booked to go to work and I'd get a last minute phone call that one of the girls was sick at daycare or at school and there was no one else to pick them up. So I did without question. I would call and I canceled TV jobs. I started to lose my identity really, really fast. And I'll remember one day in the car with Jared and I just broke down and he just couldn't understand. He said, well, then you just have to make sure that you're not doing that. Like it was just this easy fix. But I don't think he ever understood that the amount that I really was being a second mother to these girls, it wasn't just that easy as to, we'll just work more. I could not do it all. And I loved him so much. And I love the girls so much. And to be honest, I'd also had a lot of pressure put on me from his family that if I was to be with Jared, that this is what's expected of me and anything less would just be despicable, that I felt I had no choice but to give up my dreams, put myself last and be everything that they wanted me to be. As time went on, obviously we still had amazing times. There were so many highs. We had so many great memories together. I loved having the girls. I loved being there with Jared. I loved watching him play football. He and I just had so much fun. There were definitely some very, very low times. And people have asked me this question so many times over the years. How is it with the girls' mum? It was always difficult. And then it was the world of football. That was a very, very toxic, horrible world to be a part of, and one that I will not be sorry that I don't have to be around anymore. Overall, we had a beautiful time together. We got engaged in Paris, had the fairy tale proposal, and it wasn't long after that that we decided we wanted to try for a baby. I saw my gynecologist after we'd been trying for a little while and it just hadn't worked, and found out that I had a few complications, endometriosis, suspected polycystic ovaries, and I was told that I would probably have a 1% chance of falling pregnant naturally if I didn't go in and have a big cleanup. So I was booked in. It was the day of my procedure. And I thought, something's just not right. I don't want to do this. Something's not right. So I called and I cancelled. I then spoke to Jared and I said, you know what? Let's get married first. Let's put the baby on the back burner. Let's focus on this wedding and baby can come later. We'd paid the deposits. I'd had dress fittings. Then we went away for Christmas holidays and apparently had a really great time together because a couple of weeks later, I took a pregnancy test, which I really had no reason to do at the time. It was just left over in the bathroom cabinet and I was pregnant. My 1% chance of having a baby had happened. I did not experience the feelings that you probably should. I think I was in shock. I remember calling my mum and saying, we've paid for the wedding. What are we going to do? And she said, well, you're going to have a baby. And so I told Jared and that was it. I had waited my whole life to become a mum. When I talk about what my dreams were in wanting to be a judge or entering pageants or being on TV, nothing surpassed me wanting to have a beautiful wedding. And I'm not joking, I had PowerPoints made up from when I was 10 years old of my dream wedding and having my family. I think I had wanted a baby even more than ever after watching Lara and Peyton with their dad. Because one of the things that happens as a stepmom, and especially in my case, is you put all this work in and you're there for them, but they don't love you like mum and dad. It doesn't matter what you do. They will never love you like mum or dad. And I just remember looking at the way Lara and Peyton used to look at Jared and just so desperately wanting someone to look at me like that. It got to 10 weeks and we'd done our NIPT test. And in that 10 weeks, I'd had so much pressure put on me because Jared had two little girls that this had to be a boy. So I had convinced myself that I was having a boy. That's just how it was because I was going to be the one that gave Jared his boy. Everyone made comments. Imagine if it's another girl. Oh, poor Jared. This one's got to be a boy, right? Can you imagine if Jared had another girl, three girls? That's all I heard. I got the results of the NIPT test back, which is when you can find out the gender. My OB called and said, it's a girl. And I said, no, it's not. She said, yes, it is. It's wonderful. It's a little girl. And I went, are you sure? Is this definite? There can't be any mistakes. And she said, no, Courtney, it's a girl. It is. It'll be a beautiful little girl. I went, oh, okay. Well, thank you for letting me know. And hung up the phone. And I was devastated. The weird thing is, my whole life, all I'd ever wanted was a little girl. But because I'd had all this pressure put on me, I thought, oh my God, this family that I already don't feel like I'm accepted in are going to hate me even more. I felt like I'm giving him a girl, another one. I failed. And I will never forget someone in his family that was really close to him. When we told them that it was another girl, the first words out of his mouth were, oh no, not another little bitch. And that for me, I think, was a really big turning point as to the life I was in. Moving on through the pregnancy, it wasn't long after that that I got a call from my doctor to let me know that there was some things that were off in my blood results and I needed to get more testing and found out that I had CMV. It's basically a strain of herpes. Over 50% of people will have CMV in their lives, and the most common way that you pass it is through children that are in daycare, which makes perfect sense because Peyton was in daycare at the time. But the problem with CMV is if you catch it in the first trimester, which I did, it has a really high chance of getting to your baby. And if it does get to your baby, there can be devastating results. They often will have severe intellectual disabilities, vision loss to the point of potentially being blind, hearing loss to the point of being deaf, cerebral palsy. And some babies don't even survive it. So I went off to this specialist doctor. They did all the scans they could do without interfering too much. And I sat down and the doctor said to me, look, I think you're fine. There would be a 1% chance that your baby will get this. And I remember sitting there thinking, my God, how many times am I going to hear 1%? 1% that I would have a baby, 1% that she's going to be sick. But I took it and went, right, that's good odds. That's great odds. I still had a horrible pregnancy, and that was disappointing because wanting to be a mum your whole life, you want to enjoy your pregnancy. And I hated it. I hated every single magical second of it. I was sick. I had no iron, so I was getting iron infusions. I had placenta previa, so the weight that was being put on my lady parts was unbelievable. I'd started to develop preeclampsia and I didn't have a chance to enjoy it. I couldn't wait for it to be over. It was over a lot quicker than I expected. I got to 33 weeks and had gone in for another specialist scan to check that baby was still okay and that this CMV hadn't reached her. And I remember sitting at the pediatrician's office, luckily the pediatrician that would also be there when we delivered our baby. And we were there for Lara, who also saw him. And we were in the waiting room and I got a call from my OB and I walked out into the hallway to take it. And she said, Courtney, I'm really sorry, but the scan today has shown that Kennedy's head is measuring small. And that's a really big sign that the CMV has gotten to the baby. I'm going to refer you on to speak to some genetic specialist about your options. And I'm thinking, what options do I have? I'm 33 weeks pregnant, but this guy called me almost straight after. I hadn't even told Jared. I was all by myself in the hospital hallway. And this guy called me who I'd never met. And he recommended to me that the best option now was to terminate the pregnancy at 33 weeks pregnant with my 1% baby, my little girl. I'd been through all of this to terminate. It just broke me. It didn't even cross my mind for a second though that I would terminate. There was never a chance. If that's what had happened and my baby was going to come out with a disability because of this, then that's what was happening. I walked back into the pediatrician's office and we had Lara's whole appointment. I still hadn't told Jared what had happened. I kept it together and it was Jared and his ex and Lara and I. And at the very end, the pediatrician, Dr. Pincus, turned to me and said, and how are you going? How's this baby doing? And I said to him, can I please stay and talk to you? And so Jared's ex and Lara left and I just lost it. And I told him what had happened and I was just a sobbing mess. We left the hospital and we didn't even get down the road and my OB called and I was screaming at Jared before she called, this baby needs to get out of me. We need to get this baby out. I just knew within every inch of my body that my body was not safe for this baby anymore. So thank God my OB agreed and told us to come straight back and that I wouldn't be going home. We were going to have the baby in the next couple of days. So I went in and I had the steroid injections to try and strengthen the baby's lungs and went in for an emergency C-section at 34 weeks. The epidural that they give you didn't work for me. I'm sure it worked somewhat, but overall, I felt everything. I felt every cut, every moving of intestines, every tug, every pull. I felt it all. And I remember the nurse at one point, she turned to my OB and said, she's feeling this. And she said, I don't have a choice. I have to get this baby out. The room was quiet when my baby was pulled out with everyone holding their breaths. We didn't know what we were about to find. And then she screamed and it was like everyone could breathe. And I'd already told Jared beforehand, as soon as she's out, leave me. I want you to check on her head. I want you to be there when they measure her head and just tell me straight away. So he did. And the pediatrician actually called out to me and said, her head is measuring perfectly. And I went, oh, thank God. That's it. We're done. She's fine. We called her Kennedy Grace, and she was perfect. We then started to do some tests, and the first test was on her eyes. And I'd been told if there's scarring on her eyes, then she does have it, and then we're going to have to put her on medication. And I sort of am going, whatever, she won't have it. She did have it on her eyes. It means that CMV had reached my baby, and it had reached my baby in the first trimester. And what that means is, whilst she may not have a disability, she could lose her hearing, she could lose her vision, she could have intellectual impairment. We just didn't know. My little days old baby then had to go in for a brain scan. And I was told, don't worry, highly unlikely that it's going to reach her brain. And for the first time, I remember being in the car driving back to the NICU. Know exactly where I was. I was down the road from our house, the red light next to the service station. And the pediatrician called and said it didn't reach her brain. And I just lost it. Even now, thinking about it, that was just the happiest phone call that I'd gotten in so long, and what had been such a long 9 months. It didn't reach her brain. We got a phone call back a couple of days later, and people higher up had reviewed it, and she did have scarring on her brain. We really didn't know what that meant for her. She eventually got out of NICU. She came home. She was on medication, which lowered her white blood cell count. And we'd been told that to protect her from getting sick and having terrible complications, that it was just safest if we kept her away from public, away from friends and family, and pretty much isolate ourselves. Jared had to play football. Now, obviously, I knew he has to play football. That's his job. His club wouldn't let him stay with me. They had said to him, if you don't play this weekend, your pay will be cut 50% of your yearly earnings. And here we are. He's got two children that he pays child support for. I'm not earning. I can't even move properly to hold my baby, who is also sick, who I'm going to have to figure out how to give new medication to, how to be a new mum, how to breastfeed. We're supposed to be in isolation, so I'm not allowed other people around, and they wouldn't let him not play football. They don't care what happens at home. They don't care about the women. They don't care about the children. They care about their club. They care about winning. I felt really alone. I didn't get the celebration of visitors and getting to show off my new baby. There was one part that I remember very clearly that I think tipped me over the edge, and it was Father's Day. So Kennedy was less than a month old. She'd only just come home, and we couldn't have my stepdaughters in the house, which was absolutely breaking our hearts. All we wanted was to see our whole family together. And we just couldn't yet. We had to make sure Kennedy was okay. Someone close in his family called and said how disgusted they were that Jared was putting me and this other child first and not seeing his other daughters on Father's Day. And that for me was the moment that I realized I had no support in this. I had a husband that couldn't be there, and I don't blame him. I felt so alone, and things really started to take a turn for the worse for me mentally at that point. Not only had I lost my identity, but through pregnancy I'd put on 35 kilos and I didn't recognize myself. I avoided mirrors for God, I don't even know how long. I just didn't even want to look at myself. I struggled to get up in the mornings. I was struggling to have a connection with my daughter. I just didn't have that feeling. I just didn't. I was really angry. I was really down. I didn't want to leave the house. I was terrified of leaving the house. Because if I left the house, my biggest thought always was, God, poor Jared. He met the beauty queen. And look at her now. Poor Jared. I was just so embarrassed. I stopped going to football games. And then we had the odd event that I was supposed to be at. And I kept this very secret. I didn't express this to anyone. On the outside, you wouldn't have known that I was struggling. I didn't even tell my mum. I told no one. I put on a brave face and I got through the day. I suppose looking back, I would have hoped that my husband had picked up that I wasn't myself. But I couldn't blame him at the same time because I was good at putting on the brave face. But it was one day in particular and I was getting dressed and I just hated my body so much that every piece of clothing I put on just made me hate it even more. Every sleeve made me so aware of how fat I thought my arms were, my stomach, my just everything. I hated myself. And I remember breaking down. Doesn't matter how many times I tell this story, it's always really, really hard to tell. I remember breaking down on the floor of my wardrobe and just sobbing because I just thought I was so worthless. I was so ugly. I was so fat. I wasn't lovable. I was failing as a mom. I was failing as a wife. And I remember tearing this shirt off me. Jared was in here and in there and he was looking at me like I was crazy. And I probably was. But I tore this shirt off because it just couldn't be on. I couldn't get it off. I couldn't get it off me. So I tore it off and I just said to him, I'm not okay. And I really need help. And I'm never going to say that to you again. Because I can't. It's really hard for me to say. So I'm going to need you to follow up on this. Because I'm never going to say it again. But I'm not okay. And that was the last time we ever spoke about it. He never brought it up again. He never followed it up again. He never even asked if I was okay the next day. And that, I think, for me was the moment that I realized that this marriage wasn't everything that I dreamt it would be. I resented him so much from that point. And what I now have been told is postpartum depression was just getting worse and worse. And not only did I start resenting Jared, I started resenting my stepdaughters. I was the one that would wake up and do their lunches, do the school runs, do the school pickups, cook the dinners, do the washing, do the homework, shop for their clothes, turn up to every school event. And it was a lot. And I was there for them. But no one was there for me. I think the really hard part, and it kills me to say it, is I needed Jared in that moment to see that I was drowning and to take some of the brunt off me, to know that the girls couldn't be with us every second week because he wasn't even here for most of that week. It was me on my own with three children. The best way I can describe how I felt was I felt like I was in a deep ocean with all these huge waves and I was drowning. And he was up on the top of the cliff just watching it and letting it happen. So I struggled with this for quite some time. We'd been in isolation for 6 months with Kennedy. She finally got the all okay, medication had finished. And a month later, COVID hit and the whole world went back into isolation. It was continued. Jared wanted the girls to be homeschooled because he was really worried about COVID with football. So I homeschooled the girls. It was the start of 2021 when I really started to feel that something was not right with my marriage. These gut feelings going, something's not right. I didn't have the strength to follow my gut, so I ignored it for a really long time, but it was eating at me. I could feel that my husband was pulling away from me. I noticed little things that his phone was hidden from me, you know, turned upside down, that there were a few things that just weren't adding up time-wise where he said he was. Things just weren't adding up, but I kept ignoring them until one day I'd had a conversation with my brother and I told him what I was thinking. And he said to me, Courtney, I would never, ever usually say you need to check someone's phone, but I even think you need to check his phone. You need to know what's going on. And so I did, and I did it in front of him. I wasn't sneaky. And I prayed that I would not find anything. But I did. My husband had been cheating on me. Something changed in him. The moment that I confronted him and got him to admit it, something changed. That happened in September in 2021. It's been a long 7 months with times of thinking that's it, we were done, to times of thinking maybe we can salvage this, maybe I can forgive him, to realizing I couldn't, to me begging for him to come back, from some of the most ugly, awful, awful fights, to now finally accepting and knowing that my marriage is over and I am moving on to the next stage of my life. At this current point in time, and it's such a roller coaster, just being a little bit terrified of what's coming and what's next and what my life is going to look like and how I'm going to manage being a single mum with still finding myself again. I know I'll do it, but it's a little bit daunting. So I suppose that's where you join me. I'm not at a new chapter. I'm right in the middle of a very messy one, and I'm half closing one and half starting another, and I have no idea what's in store for me or what's ahead. But I do know that I am more than just a wife, more than just an ex-wife, more than just a stepmom, and I'm more than just a mum. I'm really looking forward to finding out what's in store for me with the help of some amazing women and hearing all about their stories and sharing it with you along the way. In the next episode of More Than Just a Mum, we'll be talking to Channel 7 presenter Liz Cantor, and we'll be talking all things body image post-babies.